SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very jerky Tuesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a messy opening. Let me put it to you that way. I'm slightly distracted. We had a major homeowner incident here yesterday that has contributed to the state of things right now. You love these stories. Yesterday, after I got off the air, I as it was getting off the air, I got a call from our HVAC guy. Over the weekend, you know, we got the baby here. It's 90 degrees. The air conditioning was a little out of whack. And so we called the guy. The guy actually came quickly and late last week and said, or maybe it was Saturday. I don't know. I lost track. Set the thermostat a little high and basically, you know, the line, you get this, you know, the line freezes or the coil, you know, gets iced over or whatever. So you let it thaw and kind of eased it back. Anyway, he says there's something in the VPR, whatever it was. So they said they'll come on Monday. After, you know, I said, well, I'm tied up till noon. You know, Tina heads to Rochester, blah, blah, blah. So the guy is coming right after the show. So I see the van pull in, and so I thought, well, let me go down in the basement, and I'll come up the Bilco doors, open the Bilco doors so that he can go directly into the basement and deal with the unit. So those of you that have Bilco doors, you know what goes on. You got that latch, and you undo the latch. And so I start to push those doors, you know, to open, to come up out of the basement. And right away, I felt behind my knee, a bite, a sting. And then on my arm and then the back of my head, and there's a bee's nest in there. I haven't gone through the Bilcos probably since the end of the winter. Earlier in the spring, and yeah, so out comes a swarm of bees, and I got stung repeatedly, and I can't remember. I cannot remember the last time I got stung by a bee, let alone three of them. So I don't have any issue. I know plenty of people. You know, it's dangerous for a lot of people. Including the guy from the HVAC. So now he's completely cowed by this, because he got stung last year and swelled up and had to go to the emergency room and doesn't have his EpiPen. And so I had to go back around, close the door at the base of the walk down. And, so I sealed the bees back up, and anyway, we got this. So he did the work he needed to do. But in the meantime, I've got this bite on the back of my head behind my ear, and this one hurts back behind the ear. It hurt all the rest of the day, and the other two were fine. So, but in the middle of the night, I wake up and I'm itching like crazy, the wrist and the knee. So I took a handful of Benadryl, and it seems to have abated. But anyway, so I was up from, I don't know, two to four, I guess. And I listen, it's homeowner, but you know, it's one of those things. We've had them before, but I don't remember them in the house. I don't remember them infiltrating. I've had them under the awnings and, you know, under up and around the soffits and stuff, but not like this, not in the house. So today's Enterprise is getting some. I couldn't even see it, actually. I tried to look around and see where they built their nest, and they were young. They were small too. They weren't. I don't know. It seemed like, you know, seems like a youth hostel for bees. I think is essentially what it was. So the point is between dealing with that and with you know, Tina's out in Rochester and so forth. So I'm a little. We're a little out of whack here, getting started. Plus, I talked to Andy for an extended period, and already this morning he'll be with us later. Actually, I think at 10. And Kenny McPeak, as promised, we got Kenny coming in soon, and looking forward to some Swiss skydiving follow up, some thoughts from Kenny about. You know, her development and how much she's racing, really. I mean, that's part of the story here, is how he keeps, you know, she keeps coming back for more. And she's got plenty yet to deal with. I thank you, Tom Herman. He reminded me. That's right. Tom Herman sent me, and Tom also reminds me that Bill Gallo is going to visit, and we'll talk about these two steeplechase events tomorrow and Thursday. The New York Turf Riders on Thursday, nice group, and tomorrow. The Walsh novice, but Tom reminds me about getting stung. That's right. That probably is the last time when that one, I was working the barbecue and something, and one of them flew up the back of my leg. Same spot, actually, behind the knee. That's pretty funny. Good job, Tom. Well done. Well done. I'd forgotten that. And I remember I smacked it and the thing came out my pant leg. I was wearing my chef pants, the black and white striped chef pants, and that's right. And the thing annoyed me. That might have been like a wasp or that was an annoying bite. That's right. And it stayed. There was like a welt for weeks. Pretty funny. I tell you what, the listeners don't miss anything. I'd completely forgotten that. I remember I was a kid once at Buckley School in Manchester, and I found a bee. There was like a bee somewhere. I think we were looking for four leaf clovers. Do kids still do that? Do kids still, you know, right? Kind of hands and knees and, you know, look through clover, trying to find a four leaf clover. That was a thing when I was a kid, right? Respond to that. Tell me who remembers looking for it was a bit, and you'd find them. That was the best part. You'd find a four-leaf clover, and I found a bee, and the bee was, I don't know if the bee was out of sorts or whatever. And I remember carrying it around and having it in the palm of my hand for like a recess period. It was pretty funny, and then at some point, it stung me and flew away. That was my first experience. I remember getting stung by a bee. I must have been, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11. Buckley School in Manchester, grade school. You get me in one of these moods every so often, right? I want to reach for Brian Aragone today, because tomorrow at Canterbury, we've got a stake sequence. In fact, let me reach for the Canterbury action. Tomorrow they've got a nice sequence of, including particularly the Minnesota Oaks and the Minnesota Derby. You got an all stakes pick five, all stakes pick four, including a auction sale futurity 2-year-old group that starts the sequence, the MTA sales grad futurity, 50,000, and then the 200 granders, Minnesota Oaks, Minnesota Derby, the then there's a pair of $50,000 stakes. After those, that close out the sequence, smaller fields, the Glitter Star, as well as the Wally's Choice. So all stakes, pick five tomorrow at Canterbury. So we'll reach for Brian. I haven't actually texted him yet, but I hope he's looked ahead. If he hasn't looked ahead yet for tomorrow, we'll get him on. We'll get him tomorrow. Speaking of Canterbury action, let me quickly go over, in fact, both of the pick fives that we've been tracking. Indiana as well, and you had two nice returns yesterday. At Canterbury, it's just amazing. You had two favorites, two third choices, and then a price in a turf sprint maiden group. That stymied players, and you had the only first-time starter, actually, in that maiden. This was an open company group, too. And you had an Archie bred, an Icon Ike filly for Chris Richard, a homebred of James Matheny. Taylor B. Swift. It's a cute name. 20-1, paid 42.20, and the only first-time starter in the field. And there were some horses here that had run nice races, that had run 60 buyers, including Blue Lizzie, the favorite, and second choice, Let's Party Marty. And yet, the firster takes it, and was the eighth choice out of 10, or nine, actually. There was one scratch. And again, once again, speed rules when you're looking for a price. 20-1, Canonius got Taylor B. Swift, who was midfield on the draw, the five, and asked early and got involved with the 3-2 favorite, Blue Lizzie, put her away, and wins $42.20. And that drove this thing to an $11,000 payday. $11,083, five winners of the pick five yesterday at Canterbury, with prices of $540, $980, $640, $42.20. And then actually in the nightcap, the third choice, but was 6-1. Paz the Pepper. Esteban Martinez in the nightcap. Wire to wire, beating the 3-5 favorite that Oscar Flores had sent out, Sassy Sita. So 11,000 yesterday at Canterbury to get the week started. And today's sequence is nice, actually. You've got races 5-9, Minnesota-bred two-year-olds, a couple of firsters. Then you've got a 10-claimer, 10 of them. There's 8 in the first leg, 10 in the second leg. There's 10 in the third leg, a turf mile for $7,500. Then Minnesota-bred maiden, $7,500, and closes out with a $4,000 sprint. 7. So 8 by 10 by 10 by 9 by 7 today at Canterbury. And since we're doing this, let's look at what went on yesterday at Indiana as well. Indiana closed out with a pair of maiden quarter horse races. Another big hand. The Indiana season, they have had just from the minute the gates opened, they've just had a terrific meet. And it continues. And the sequence yesterday, three favorites and a fifth and sixth choice. There were two prices that were tough. There was Tiana Richardville sending out Stop Hammer Time. And this a fifth choice in a field of seven. paid $19. But then you had $6.20, Johnny Unleashed, Eric Foster, paid $6.20. Then the other tough horse in the sequence, Moonline in the Nickel Claimer, going sixth, the sixth choice, Moonline, with Robbie Alvarado aboard, paid $35. And then you had the two favorites, $5.80 and $5.20. This one paid $3,575. So, and these fields were pretty, you know, were fairly mundane, 7 by 9 by 9 by 12 by 6. So I actually had a couple of, you know, a couple of nice size, 43 horses total, in the sequence. So these just continue on a daily basis to be worth looking at. And, today, Indiana, actually today, you've got sizable sequence, 7 by 9 by 8 by 10 by 11. And today it's races 5 through 9 with a couple of allowance quarter horse events closing things out. The feature, Indiana bred second level allowance. And actually there's an open company as well. Mile 70 on the main first level allowance. That's got a group of 8, and then, the Indiana bred non-winners of 2 lifetime. 8-5 favorite from Jeff Greenhill. Nutty Train back again. Seen Nutty Train a few times. So some nice sequences on a Tuesday. Still got some weekend action to recap yet, too. And before we go to the break, I should mention, too, I got in contact with Scott Fiedler. I mentioned Scott's win yesterday over the weekend, and how about Scott's success, over $250,000 on the weekend spa and surf contest on horse tourneys. Unbelievable. 2-day marathon, and Fiedler, whose business has been affected, he runs sports camps, and this is really a... got to be a gratifying victory. And so we'll talk to Scott tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. And actually, we're also going to talk to, we're also going to go to Ruidoso tomorrow. Yeah, which I don't think I can ever remember having a chance to talk. Yeah, well, obviously, we're going to have to touch on the quarters. And Jeff True is going to join us. They've got an on-site contest this week, so coming up. But it's also, you got a ton of qualifying going on for the quarters and leading into the All-American Futurity. So Jeff True tomorrow from Ruidoso, as well as Scott Fiedler, to talk about his pretty magical weekend. And you know, I John Nichols, the other, I guess it was Sunday night, John included me in a and Pete in a kind of a concerning scenario for those of you on the contest front. And there's been quite a bit of chatter about it, and John was essentially ghosted. You know, the selections being shown in a pick and pray, and Horse Tourneys is going to adjust, I think, the way they handle that. It's understandable because, the people on the contest scene, you know, you're familiar, even Hammer, who's waded into it, you know, knows, he says, you know, that he's recognizing the people that he's playing against, and you know who's sharp, right? Doesn't take, you know, too much wading into the competition to see who's atop the leaderboards. I mean, we say all the time, you know, some of the most familiar names. So John, essentially in the, you know, the group of races that that he showed. Was being parroted. And then, you know, essentially using all the same picks that John was using and then changed one or two. So, you know, the spirit of competition, you know, I guess there's ways to cut corners no matter what. There's people trying to take an edge. We say this all the time. You know, when money's involved, people are going to, it really doesn't, sit well. I mean, this is different than the collusion. This is, you know, make your own picks it's not like drafting. It's not like in NASCAR where, you know, and in motorsports where you're drafting. And even Tony's talked about this, actually, even in horse racing, if it's on a windy, you know, you're tucking in behind horses and decreasing wind resistance, that's a little different. But drafting off of successful players, come on, that's just not in the right spirit of competition at all. So anyway, I just I saw that, and it was a little, you know. Not nice. It's not the way to, be. As my partner, when my business partner in Montreal for years, Katrin, if I would annoy her, Katrin would say, the way you are is not the way to be. Make me laugh. Too funny. We'll head for the break. Let's do that, Case, and then Kenny McPeak is going to join us. And as we do that, let me get a few other that I already did yesterday. Throw that. I promised Tina. Tina cleaned her office. Very impressed with what she did. Her office was. It was like a scene from Saving Private Ryan, making your way through there, you know, with that bombed out town and there's stuff everywhere. And I'm fairly convinced that she has this wooden ironing board. I'm pretty sure she set it up so that if I came through her, she says, stay out of my office. Don't touch anything. So I think she set up this heavy wooden ironing board so that if I came through, remember the game Mousetrap? Yeah, it was like that. She knew that I would hit something and then the ironing board would fall and hit me. That so she, I give her credit. She cleaned her office, so I promised I would do mine. So I actually was able to wade through the desk, and I would say I eliminated about half of the piles of PPs. And you know, I save all the maiden 2-year-old races, and I save the stakes. But I, you know, then the rest I'll take, and I'll take the staples out, and I'll turn them over, and I'll print on them again. I'm only slightly wasteful. I told you this was going to be a kind of a haphazard and herky-jerky morning. I could tell. I just knew going in. Some numbers finally came back, by the way. I should slip these in. Cantata, just a 74 for that maiden race yesterday, from Sunday, the opener, that looked hot. But, you know, came back just moderate in terms of number. And those numbers finally came back, by the way, from Woodbine. I sent Cassie and company some of those figures. And, you know, notably, the because I think Josie Carroll's going to have to make a decision, right, about what they're going to do. John Sikora and exchanged a couple of notes with John. The Woodbine Oaks came back with a 93, Curlin's Voyage. And for the boys' race, for Clayton, an 89. So the 2 mile and an eighth races, Curlin's Voyage, clearly, I think she's got to, they got to point her for the plate, right? Yeah, I think so. I think so. And March to the Arch, very nice. A 101 buyer for him in the King Eddie. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Kenny McPeak, Swiss skydiver, after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From the
races, bottom of the hour. On a Tuesday, and Kenny McPeak hustled back to Kentucky, not long, actually, right after Swiss Skydiver won. She actually is going to stay a little bit longer because the van situation changed. Meantime, she absolutely confirmed herself what everybody believed her to be, and that is the division leader, and the division seems to get better week after week. A mile and a quarter, the Alabama, and absolute definitive performance by this daredevil filly, and Ken McPeak joins us. Kenny, congratulations to you and Peter Callahan.
Thank you. Yeah, she's some kind of special filly to be around, I tell you.
What's fun about her too, Kenny, is you just keep running her. I mean, she seems to be thriving on the work. She's done every single thing that you've asked. She's gone strength to strength and has gotten better as the season has gone on.
Everybody keeps waiting for her to wilt too, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
She's going to find now. She just keeps getting better. So, but you know, the key is she's a really good eating filly. I mean, she's been a filly that thrives in the feed tub. And you know, when a horse is thriving in the feed tub, you can't be scared to run them. I mean, isn't that why we play the game? And you know, Peter says, "Hey, you know, look, if she's doing good, go." He's okay with it. So, you know, you don't turn your nose up at a race like the Alabama because you're worried about spacing, especially if one's doing good. With everything going on, there's no guarantee we're even going to have an Oaks still. Anyway, we'll see.
Well, she's, I don't want to say overcome circumstances, but given the schedule, it is amazing that she's gotten in as many as many starts as she has. I mean, in a lot of ways, Ken, this seemed like a real bookend to the storylines of Tis the Law last week. But Tis the Law's season was really affected by the way in which the calendar had to be adjusted. She has not. I mean, she's run January, February, March, May, June, July, August.
Yeah, well, the schedule kept changing, you know, and at one point, after the fantasy, there wasn't even a schedule. There wasn't any.
That's
true. Knew when the Oaks was going to be. Nobody knew when the Santa Anita Oaks was going to be. Nobody knew any of these races. The Alabama was unscheduled at the time. So it's been a wild, crazy year. So you just adapt as you go, right?
Well, and we've talked repeatedly about her and you know, coming out of this variety of wins, the Gulfstream Oaks, then the Fantasy, then the Santa Anita Oaks, and we'll talk about Speech and her competition in a minute. Yeah, then the Audacious Try in the Bluegrass, and she ran terrific against what is probably the second best 3-year-old male right now in the country, an Art Collector. And then you know, you come to Saratoga, and you know, you've had fillies of this quality, Kenny, on a regular basis throughout your career, and TCL, Take Charge Lady, you know, comes to mind immediately. A lot of these wins, you've won multiple times, and obviously the Kentucky Oaks has eluded, but you know, feels like you're going in absolutely with a loaded gun in here. Talk about her performance Saturday, and if it exceeded expectations.
It really did. You know, we talked to her originally about skipping the Alabama, but, you know, she's so sturdy. It was one of those deals where you sit and you go, gosh, she's doing good. Why would we turn our nose up at the Alabama? And we knew that if we said we were coming, it'd probably scare off at least a few. And, you know, actually, I thought she'd have to work a little harder for it, to be honest. And she just pretty much you know, laughed her way home. She trained well up there, and just as she always does, she ate well. And even post-race, we dropped her feed tub in. She was done in an hour. It's pretty crazy. She did that after the Bluegrass. And I do think we went too quick the first half in the Bluegrass, but hindsight's 20/20. But, you know, just a real pleasure to be around a filly like that. And we're going to keep our fingers crossed that she can continue on.
Well, in this particular case, and I'm just looking at splits in those mile and a 16th tries, the Gulfstream Oaks, the Fantasy, and the Santa Anita Oaks, and then the mile and an eighth, and really, you know, she went at her pace. I mean, it did take a top effort from, you know, a horse of Art Collector's quality to, you know, overhaul her. And then you look at this, you know, she really kind of clicked off the kind of, you know, 23 and change fractions, 24-ish fractions that you love to see going a mile and a quarter. And then to Tyler's credit, he pretty much wrapped up on her, you know, in the late stages.
Yeah, I thought that was a really smart move on his part. You can see him looking over at the tote board or the video board on the way home, and he saw he was so clear. But yeah, he that was good for him to spot that and, you know, make her finish and knock her out.
Talk about, and we can fold in before we talk Oaks and so forth, and the, you know, the last third of the year. Got to discuss her background, and, you know, when you look at the pedigree side of this, and I'll discuss it tomorrow with Sid Fernando, Daredevil, and she's, you know, clearly feels like she's going to be Daredevil's best get in North America. Now he's been exported, but out of a Johannesburg mare. And so the mile and a quarter, you know, and I suppose some people might have looked at the mile and an eighth in the bluegrass and the finish there and said, well, you know, the mile and a quarter, is it out of the scope? And yet, you know, she absolutely handled it. You know, there's a lot of things to examine in there, Kenny. I mean, in terms of, you know, on pedigree, she's kind of a middle distance pedigree, and yet she travels in a way that 10 furlongs was absolutely in her scope.
Yeah, when she got Strike the Gold in second dam.
Yeah.
He's a second dam sire, and he was, you know, what by our typical mile and a quarter horse. But, you know, good horses do this stuff. And you know, she's always been rateable. There wasn't any reason in the world for people to assume she wouldn't rate. She's always been very rateable. And, you know, although she had enough speed to be able to pop off early if you needed her to. And, we talked the other day in the paddock. I told him, I said, if you can hit 48 the first half mile, then I'm happy after that. Do whatever you want, just don't go any quicker than 48. And then with 47 and 4, he's a length off. So he knew what he was doing. And it was an awful fun day for Peter Callahan.
And I saw Peter interviewed, in fact, beforehand, and he talked about, you know, being a blue-collar guy, and this is a blue-collar filly, and we bought her for a blue-collar price. And $35,000 as a Keeneland yearling, hip $29.97. So what was she, a fourth book?
Yeah, book four.
Book four. What did you like about her, Kenny, when you looked?
Well, you know, I don't get all enamored with the hot powered pedigrees and all that stuff.
Sure.
My early career, my budgets were always modest, and in some sense, it's a, you know, it's a value play. You try, if you buy the hot stallion out of the hot mare, then there's very little value. I just stick to the physicals. I mean, if a horse physically looks the part, it doesn't matter to me whether they've given up on the stallion or, you know, whatever the scenario is. My job is to figure out where the runners are, and that's not going to change. I still go over there and do the same thing. And we're going to, you know, we got a sale coming up, so we're going to get in the trenches on that and do it again, hopefully.
Second for you, second to Alabama in 3 years, Eskimo Kisses as well. What do you look for in a filly to be confident to send them 10 furlongs?
Well, I mean, length of hip for sure, and then they've got to know how to pace themselves. You know, she, earlier in her career, we were probably, and I think it's a, I'd use the word guilty of not letting her use her speed early, but we wanted to teach her how to run. And we took her back in her first race and let her wiggle her way through horses, and she got it done irregardless. And I think those lessons early on, you can get a horse to go further if you teach him those things. But, you know, she's obviously got the mind for it also, so that's always helpful. And obviously she's got a deep air, you know, she gets plenty of air, and you know, it's just really impressive what she does every day.
You know, it occurs to me, I kind of referenced your record with, you know, top level fillies, and you know, not that you haven't picked out plenty of nice males, but it's Kenny, it's fair to say that you've had slightly more, is that right, do you think, slightly more top fillies than boys?
You know, I honestly haven't said that and counted. It doesn't. I mean, lately it seems like we've had an exceptional group of fillies. Whether it was Daddy's Little Darling, or you know, Take Charge Lady, or Eskimo Kisses,
Rosalind.
I'm not fair sure of really good colts. I mean, Tahana Run, Harlem Holiday, who I didn't buy, but I trained. Repent was obviously a special horse. Golden Ticket wasn't too shabby in his own
right.
Yeah. Every one of them is different. I mean, it just depends. I think I can win another Alabama next year with the crop I've got in my hands now. I mean, I've got some fantastic young fillies that are really coming around. And if we take our time, I think we could win 3 out of 4. Fingers crossed, and, you know, hope springs eternal, right?
Well, and we'll talk about your babies in a minute, as well as, you know, and Votante, who, you know, a lot of people were gravitating to Votante as an alternative on Saturday in the Alabama. How much of it obviously gets down to your client interests and what kind of program they're running? You know, there's plenty of people that only want to buy fillies because of the residual value. Then there's people that are campaigning essentially, you know, for stallions and are looking for success in the classics. So I suppose a lot of this, when it comes to going to the sales, depends on your client base.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I work the auction, I've got a list of different people we're buying for, whether it's Three Chimneys or Scott Leeds or Harold Lerner or Gainesway. I mean, I've got a really great group of clients right now. And Andutant's a really, really good filly. In all honesty, I made some mistakes with her. I really should have probably run her in the Delaware Oaks or the Iowa Oaks. I do think she's a very good grade 3, grade 2 type filly. But you get windows of opportunity, like the Ashland wasn't a big field. And anytime you can win a grade 1 or even place in a grade 1 with a filly of her caliber, then you've got the upside, long-term upside, is so dramatic, and we're after grade 1 winners. And we'll probably drop her down to a grade 3 or grade 2 in her next race. You know, she's just not up for Swiss, and they've been workmates, and it's, you know, just for whatever reason, she fits a notch below, but that's nothing to be ashamed of. And,
no.
And we'll I think we're looking at the Remington Park Oaks with her, or possibly the Black Eyed Susan, and you know, those are high-level problems, too. And, you know, we've got to try to figure out how to get black type for as many of these fillies as we can.
Exactly. And she's, you know, she's certainly, you know, between the grade 1 placement in the Ashland, that a good start on the black type front. And, well, you know, she ended up what? She ended up beating 5 for third here in the Alabama. But she's already grade 1 placed, so that goes a long way. Speaking of which, Speech, of course, won the Ashland, and this group of fillies, and then later, Kenny, when it comes to the fillies starting to meet the mares, and when we start thinking about the Breeders' Cup distaff, I mean, this could end up being, in fact, Andy Serling and I were talking last night. This could be as good a Breeders' Cup distaff. I don't want to, you know, leap forward past the Kentucky Oaks, but what's shaping up as just an epic group of fillies and mares for the fall.
Well, that's you know, a little ways away for me. I'm just trying to think 3-year olds with mine right now. But yeah, it could be very good. Monomoy Girls still out there, Midnight Bijou's running. it's gonna be a tough one.
Let's talk about the Oaks and adding that to the resume. And you've taken swings with good ones before. And there's no issue, obviously, cutting back from the 10 furlongs to the 9. Certainly with Gamin in there, we get the sense that we know there's going to be a pace setter that's going to, you know, go to the lead. Some thoughts about what's rattling around in your head as you drove from Saratoga back to Louisville?
No, I mean, we're set for the Oaks. I get calls from random people telling me to run in the Derby. And ultimately, Peter and I, we'll decide. But today it's pretty much a no-brainer. I think to run, everybody says Duck Gamin and all about all her figures, but she hadn't been 2 turns. It's a little bit different, whether she's got the mind for that. I mean, she's obviously freakishly talented, but it's those races unfold a little bit different. And I know what I've got with my filly, and we're pretty content that that's where we belong. And it's a high level problem. I'm not gonna lose any sleep over that for sure.
Well, and I don't get the. the calls for her to even consider. I mean, to consider Derby, it's just silly.
Well, when we ran in the Bluegrass, there were multiple reasons for it. So let me explain those real quick. So one, we wanted to give En Boutant, and, my clients are good about it. I hate running against myself. I hated running against myself last weekend. But, we talked about, could we win the Bluegrass? We felt like there was only one horse on paper that we had to beat. And on the sheets, it was her race to win, with the exception of Art Collector, who had run a couple of 7s. And if he regressed a little bit and we could run a 6 or so, we thought we could win the Bluegrass. I think we went too fast the first half mile. I think that we probably should have rated her a little bit that day. But, Mike said she was doing it easy, and hindsight's 20/20, but we end up second. We also were thinking that if we could whip the boys, okay, and get in position for whether it's the Derby or the Preakness, then because we know the Preakness is a month later this year, now we've got points to get in that. So if that race overfills, and let's say we jump through this next hoop and we win the Oaks, then and who's to say we couldn't run in the Preakness?
Right.
Well, because there's no 3-year-old filly stakes out there at all.
Well,
I mean, really, somebody show me what else is out there. It's pretty much over as far as the season for 3-year-old fillies. Certainly grade ones are, you can run in the Black-Eyed Susan, but that's a downgrade. So, anyway, these are great problems to have. I wish every year I had this problem.
Well, let's wish Peter and you and her and Brian Hernandez Jr. back aboard for
Oaks.
That's
not set yet. We're
it's
discussing
not.
Some of that. No, it's
really?
Not completely set.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. But, we want to have Brian back on. We're also concerned that if she were to win the Oaks, where do we go? If we go to Pimlico, then are we going to lose him again to Art Collector? So, same thing, high level problems. But
interesting, good point.
Yeah.
All right. Multiple layers of this. Good point. All right, so we'll watch for that. We got time. Let's take a couple of minutes and look ahead and see what else we can glean from the rest of the summer at Ellis and Saratoga. And, of course, if I think back a few summers, you and Buff Bradley and Dale Romans were all, the early pioneers when it came to staying home with some of the two-year-olds and running at Ellis. And it's only gotten more lucrative at Ellis for the babies. You got Bold Minister coming up on Saturday looking for a diploma.
Yeah, this is a pretty nice colt. I think the mile is going to suit him, and he's spot on ready. He's by First Crop Stallion Firing Line out of my favorite Deputy Minister mare. That's a good colt. I think you could see him winning first time, possibly. We'll try to teach him a little something in the race, but that colt, he's been working in company regularly with a horse named Drop Anchor, who won first time out over there, and they're pretty even when it comes to talent.
Well, that's encouraging. What's the backstory on Bold Minister?
I bought him as a yearling, hit number 3,000, or I don't know what number he was. He was late in the sale. Might have been book five. And actually, that I bid on so many horses, I got outbid on for those guys. And then finally, we nailed him down late. And I couldn't have been happier. I bought him off TaylorMade. And that colt, take a look at him this weekend. He's a nice horse.
He's by Firing Line. He's out of the Deputy Minister Mare, Aunt Winnie, who dropped in Ireland. Clear Sky product. And just looking to, what about those? You mentioned the guys, Steve Crabtree, Dean DeMary, and Tom Cirrus.
Those guys are also in on Signalman.
Okay.
So those, and Signalman was a $32,000 yearling himself. He's made almost $600,000, and he's getting ready to run Derby Week again. We gave him a test drive on the grass that didn't go all that well, but he was third in a stake at Turfway in March, and we've been fighting a little quarter crack with him, but that's passed. And those guys, they love the game. They don't spend a huge budget. And got another new shooter in there, Tom Cerisi. He's partners with Dean DeMary and Steve Crabtree. But, they're all excited. I'm sure they'll all be there.
Well, and Kenny, you've had a very nice season at Ellis with selective number of starters, 6 wins from 17 starts.
Yeah, we're getting our 2-year-olds geared up. You may have heard we acquired that training center in Ocala.
Yes.
The old Padua. A lot of them were prepared there. And we've been real patient bringing them around. I like to run them longer, and they've ridden a lot of these races longer. I think all of our wins have been going long with young horses except for Drop Anchor, who won going short. But I think that whole process, Dominic Brennan runs that operation for me in Florida, and it's a great setup. Love showing it off. I mean, you Google Summerfield Training Center. It's a division of McPeak Racing, but it is a great spot to get them ready. And these young horses, I tell you this, we're loaded with a bunch of bullets. I don't know how many more we could win with before fall.
Well, and while we're on the topic, you mentioned Drop Anchor, who won last Sunday, and also last Sunday on that nice card at Ellis, you had the debutante win with Crazy Beautiful.
Yeah, she's high-level talent. She's pointed towards the Pocahontas, and I'm probably going to run 2 in the Pocahontas, Dreamquist as well. The first winner for Nyquist, she won down at Ellis. And I got the filly in New York, Simply Ravishing, that broke her maiden at Saratoga. A New York bred, won an open company. She's going to run back in the P.G. Johnson. Same thing. I mean, really good problems to have. It's such a fight to stay on top in this game. I mean, you go through seasons where you might not have those top horses, and then you have years and things are all coming together, and then you have other years, or you might go a few more years where you don't have the ones you hope to have, and it's what makes the game so interesting. And we're in it for the long haul. We have good years and we have bad, and I think we're getting ready to go on a real high roll. We really are. Maybe we're already on it.
Well, what about the maiden winner down in Florida, too, a couple of weeks ago, Raining Sunshine?
Well, she comes back in the Florida Stallion Series, and she's extremely fast. You know, Dominic Brennan and Marty Haught own her, and I couldn't be happier for them either. That filly, you know, they're going to stretch her out, and then she, you know, she's my first dude, I think, and she'll stretch out, which I think she needs a little longer anyway. And, yeah, that filly's got a shot to do some real damage in her next couple of races.
Give us a couple of the unraced that you clearly are excited about. I can tell.
Gosh, where to begin? King Fury, the Curlin colt, was one of the pricier Curlins at the Saratoga Sale. That's a horse that you're going to see first week in September. I've got another drop anchor or another anchor down filly.
Yeah,
that's out of a full sister to Majestic Perfection. She's a beautiful filly. I got Olivia of the Desert, who's a Bernardini, that should win Saturday or Sunday at Ellis. She's got a big future. Let me see here. I mean, I can give you a bunch. Royal Trist, the Medaglia d'Oro colt. Camp Hope, a summer front colt that's getting ready. All these are going to be a little bit later in the season. I've got a French filly named Symbol Just that we bought at Arcana. It's any kind of horse. I got a Candy Ride filly named Tabor Hall, any kind of horse. I've got a Run Happy filly. I know people are a little concerned about how he's gotten, what kind of start he's gotten off on, but she's out of a Seeking the Gold mare, and she's got every chance to be a stake horse. I mean, there's quite a bit of depth there. And got an Empire Maker colt that's getting ready to get back in training, coming off shins. Yep, so we got a lot of work to do, hopefully it all comes together. There's a lot of good horses in here. I mean, good trainers get good horses. I mean, I started off with claiming horses, and, you know, every year I said, well, let's get a few more young horses, and now we've got big crops of young horses. It's a complete luxury. Most trainers don't get this opportunity.
Well, there's a nice array, and it is a nice it's a nice mix of names and pedigrees, it seems. One more or two more that are coming up this week. My Man Flintstone comes back on Friday at Saratoga.
Yeah, I think we snuck him in for 50, thinking that was the right spot, and he got beaten. But he is doing really well, and the 50 starter hits him right on the head. And I think they may give him the favoritism on that race. And he's a neat little horse. You know, he ran second in the graded stake at the Turfway, and he's fast. He doesn't want to go very far, but he's wicked fast.
And how about Curls and Bows, who's been a bit of a frustration?
Well, we dropped her in for 50 as well because we really felt like she needed to win and get a mindset of winning, and they actually had a three-way shake for her, and then the state vet voided it, which, you know, on that topic, some of these rules are really, to me, a little bit confusing. But she's back in at Ellis, and I'm not sure if she wants to go that far, but we're going to, you know, it's a good next spot for her. And there's that same starter 50 coming back at Churchill next month. So we'll probably, if we don't win this spot, then we'll come back in that starter 50 on the 23rd of September.
Well, it may have turned out to have been, you know, fortuitous. I mean, maiden claimer was for 50, and she romped, and yet you still get to bring her home.
Yeah, we got lucky, I think.
I guess. Pretty funny. Well, Kenny, loaded wagon, but the focus right now, Swiss Skydiver, looking to get you an elusive Kentucky Oaks, and looking forward to being at Churchill Oaks Derby Week, and safe travels for her and everybody making their way to Louisville. Kenny McPeak, well done, and we'll see you soon. We'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Always fun. Kenny McPeak, everybody. You can follow Kenny McPeak Racing and or as Kenny McPeak on Twitter. Let's take a top of the hour break. It's 10-ish, and Andy Serling going to join us in just a couple of minutes here, and we'll go over the weekend, get Andy's thoughts. Bill Gallo at the bottom of the hour as well. We'll talk with Bill about what's going to be the last two chase races of the season. And we've got to get Bill's take on how they're going to deal with losing the rest of the Colonial season. It's been, I didn't even bring that up with Jill Byrne yesterday. The Colonial calendar scuttled and by COVID. And it also takes away, you know, these two a week or more opportunities for the chasers. Back after this, Andy Serling first. At the races, hour two.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow! What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.